Hey, folks, welcome back to Foul Players Radio. We have a guest tonight that I'm sure you all know, especially if you live in the Baltimore area. We have Mr. Nestor Aparicio here tonight. Nestor's done lots of things in this area here. You know, he's worked for the Sun Paper. He's had WNST. He's had Baltimore Positive. Worked at Hammerjacks. Done lots of great things. So welcome this evening, Nestor. Good to have you, bud.
I never really worked at Hammerjacks. Louis never paid me, but I never paid him either. Except okay. I bought a couple of beers, but now I worked for the Sun, so I worked at Hammerjacks, but I worked at Meriwether, the Capitol Center, all those places as a media member, but not as an employee. I did work at Soundwaves at East Point Mall as an employee, summer 84. There you go.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah, I was referred to you by Bud Becker, who I've had on my program a number of times, you know, telling me all the stories that he's had, not only from Hammerjacks, but being on the road with all these great rock acts throughout the 60s and 70s. And I was glad to finally get you here. You know, I just mentioned to you a little bit earlier, you know, we're both Dundalk boys. We're both the same age. We would have been in school together if I would have gone there. You know, but the one thing I...
If you were lucky enough to have gone to Dundalk.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, but the one thing I wanted to mention is I did meet you once, and it was at Steeltown.
God. That was 1991,
I think it was.
Okay, and, all right.
And here's how it went. I was there with my bandmates. We were in a band called Orange Seed Parade at the time. We had just finished, or we had been working on our album. And
Like when I was the music critic at the paper, or was by then?
Yes. Yeah, you were the music critic at the paper.
See, when Steeltown came, was right at the end of my one of my last reviews or interviews I did was in November of 1991 was David Bowie. And I left the paper in January of 92. So I don't know when Steeltown was there, but it wasn't there long. Mike Brohard, was it Mickey Coachella? Who was involved in running Steeltown?
I don't remember.
I know it was in the parking lot of North Point,
where the flea market is.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Yeah. But we were like, hey, we ought to send, you said, send me a tape. And we're like, we were like, oh, hell no. We were afraid to send it to you.
Why?
We were afraid you wouldn't like it.
People send me music all the time. The one thing that I guess I didn't understand when I was 18 years old, and I did when it came to publicists, that they were looking for me to write about their band, but there were local bands that wanted me to write about them to have a clip in the paper and how important that would be, that their name would be in the paper or whatever. And it was never lost on me that people, it was important to them, I'm dear friends with John Allen as one of my lifelong friends from Child's Play and SR-71 and Charm City Devils and whatever. And, his band with Brian Jack and Idzy and Nikki Kay, Wrathchild America popped up. They were all chasing kicks, right? They were all the Baltimore Beatles. And, and that was the fun part of the local circuit was that, at one point, Poison opened for Child's Play.
They did.
At Siegel. Mm-hmm. So, the band's on their way up and on their way down and all that. When I read Steve Gorman's book on the Black Crowes, and he talked about the Atlanta music scene, that there was a hierarchy and all that. Mm-hmm. It was very much that way here, and Susie Mudd would come out and write about your band, or, I would come out and write about the band or whatever. Huh. But I like doing local stuff, and the paper wanted local stuff. So local bands and the local stages, anybody that felt like Beyond Words was a band. And even when I was a kid, Paper Cup and Shore
Paper
Patrol.
Shore
Patrol, those bands were huge. Uh-huh. Did you go to Standstock by any chance?
I haven't. It seems like the one thing is that you run into when you're a performer is that, other people, you have your friends that are performers. They can't come see you because they're performing. It seems like every year there's been Standstock. I've always had a gig or something I've had to do, and I've just not been able to do it, which is horrible. But I'd love to come out and support it,
Well, Stan was my parents and Stan's parents were best friends in the world.
Is that
so
right?
So if you think, Fred and Ethel and Lucy and Ricky, my parents his parents were best friends. They're much older than me. All the Gibson family, they were a generation, older than they were my stepbrother's age. Born in the late 40s, early 50s, early 60s. I was born in the late 60s. Uh-huh. But we spent every holiday at their house. And Stan Gibson was the first person to ever take me to a radio station. It was Thanksgiving night, and his friend was spinning tunes at WEBB. which became one of my first radio stations at 1360. It was over off of North Avenue, you know, off where the Dunbar Athletic, the Poet Clubs was on the north side of North Avenue.
Challenge
neighborhood, even in 1978, right? But he took me over there to deliver Thanksgiving dinner to a man named Curtis Anderson. Anyone who's old school here would remember Curtis Anderson as a jock. I never, apparently he passed recently in the last 10 years, but I never met him in adulthood. And I wish I would have, because I was a little boy with Stan Gibson driving on Thanksgiving night over to North Avenue to deliver Miss Gert, his mother, and Mr. Sam, his father, made the best kielbasa and sauerkraut. And we delivered that to the radio station when I was a little boy. And I guess it made some sort of an impression upon me. All I ever really wanted to do was be a newspaper writer, right? Literally. I never thought of being in radio, being on the radio, being a disc jockey, interviewing people, certainly not owning an FCC license for 23 years. And I grew up in Tom Pless's high school, right?
So we talk
about old school stuff, the things that born of Hammer Jackson of music, the radio station at Dundalk High School was an amazing thing that I never really participated in. And it was in my homeroom. Brillhart, you know, Derek, all those people that were involved, Tom Pless, in running that radio station, still to this day running the underground at 97 Underground. I have, you know, I have these old school stories. I've sort of touched and weaved through all of these people over all this time. Maybe I'm the Forrest Gump of Baltimore music. I don't know.
Maybe so. Maybe so. I mean, and you're touching on so many great things that I remember too, you know. You know, 97 Underground, you know, my band got airplay on there. We got interviewed on there one time with Krista Kyle. That was a great thing because, now I remember back in those days, 98 Rock, WAVA in DC, and a number of other ones, those radio stations used to put out, they used to support local music with their concert hotlines and everything, but they had
they did an 11 o'clock albums. Hour, or they did a weekend show, right? The local artists, local licks, Sunday morning, whatever. There was a place for band, and it was the only place you could get discovered in 1985, than handing a tape to a music critic at the paper, right?
Right.
And I was writing about David Bowie, not about your band at Steeltown or whatever, but I did always, if a band was going to get signed, I wrote about Mannequin. It was another band that, you know, had a lot of juice. The Loft, Brian is still a Facebook friend of mine from The Loft. They weren't necessarily a signed band. And Ronnie Furman was always trying to get the Woody signed and the Woodbury, whatever the hell they were called. Greenberry Woods. I call it Woodbury Kitchen. That's a restaurant.
I know. But what I was saying too is that, you know, these stations, they had their albums out with local bands on them, but it seems like 97 Underground almost took it one step further. You know, they had their album out with, and I've had half the guests on the show too, or half of the people on that album as guests on my show. But they were also, they were the ones that really made the local acts a staple of their airplay. You know, much more so than, you know, just having like a specialized show, you know, like 98 Rock or 101.
Well, they're part of the furniture of what you do in the way that Baltimore things are a part of the furniture of what I do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel it with 100.7 in the way they embrace the Ravens and the way they embrace Crack the Sky and the way they embrace Kicks. Mm-hmm. And that's it should be that way, right? I mean, really,
that
if you're not getting played in your hometown. Yeah, I'm a big Rush fan, right? You know, Rush broke on the radio in America in Cleveland, even though they were a Canadian band, because you could hear the music across the water.
Yep.
And a Cleveland disc jockey took interest in a song. And 50 years later, and Neil Peart, you know, RIP, but we still know of that band because somebody gave them a chance and played their record, you know, and that was the power of Wolfman Jack. It's the reason in my FCC license, there's a whole plugola thing.
Right.
You can't do that. But that was the Wild Wild West, right? In the '70s. Did you ever see the HBO show that I'm wearing the shirt, Vinyl?
Yes. I'd seen a bit of it. I hadn't seen the whole series, though. But
Well, it was only a handful of shows, and they pulled the plug on it. But it was Mick Jagger's kid. The Nasty Bits were the band. They were the British band with the singer who had the drug problem, who was screwing the PR girl from the record company and everybody. So, it was a whole, like, it was great. But that really portrayed, in many respects, and it was, you know, hyper crazy, drugged up and like all that, which I have no doubt that 1975 a record label would be like that.
Oh,
but
yeah,
the stories and the way it was portrayed was such a fun thing. And some people hated it. A lot of my rock and roll friends hated it. I loved it. I want them to make more of it. But that wild, wild west of how bands got signed, how they got managed, the drugs they did, the girls, the record companies, the money, where it came from, how they got in vans. I mean, it's all very romantic, right? Mm-hmm. That they were all chasing an airplane like Led Zeppelin had or the Rolling Stones had, right?
Mm-hmm.
Still chasing that.
yeah, I know. And and how music has changed and everything over the years when it comes to compensation for the actual artists. You know, I'm hearing about, you know, how the guys back in those days had the Rolls Royces and the mansions and the airplanes and everything, and then nowadays they're getting a tenth of a cent for a stream. You know, big difference. You know.
Well, I mean, especially, you know, when the royalty checks come on that side, right?
Yeah,
and there were
right.
a lot of art. I mean, the Beatles and a whole bunch of artists, right? Prince, you know, that would say, we're not going to be on Spotify. We're not going to be have our music stolen.
Right.
You know, look, it all started with Napster, right? And no, it all started with mixtapes. It all started when
I could.
And this, my parents took me to the mall back in 79 or 80, we had boom boxes, right?
Yep.
The boom box had the ability to tape off the radio.
Yes, it did.
So like in 1979 on WLPL, I was telling Donna Jean Rumbly this, right? That, you know, WLPL, they would play Island Girl for me, Elton John. They would play I Want You to Want Me back in the day. And I would record that, put it on a Kmart tape.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I had Rush's Moving Pictures. That's how I had Styx's Paradise Theater. Styx's Paradise Theater debuted at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. I stayed up. My parents bought me a stereo. It was beautiful. Like, if I could get that stereo again, it was a Yorks. It had green and red, like, things that went up and down when Kevin Cronin sang, REO Speedwagon songs. It had the lights. It looked like a real radio. It looked like WKRP when you were 11 in 1980 in Dundalk, believe me.
Yeah, yeah.
But it had the record button on it. Mm-hmm. And you could record the radio as long as you could get a Memorex or a tape or a Kmart tape or 10 tapes for $3 in the bag or whatever. And you didn't rip out, you could start the pirate music. So once that happened, I don't know how to put the G, and I'm not for stealing music, believe me, right?
I want
artists to be compensated, but I don't know where this is going at this point with, you know, Apple and CDs gone and you know, all forms of that kind of media, tangible media gone now. I you know what, I relish the concert.
Yes.
I mean, I'm seeing the Stones this week. I hope to see the Eagles again this week. I'm hoping to see the Black Crowes at some point, even though I'm pissed off about what happened with Gorman.
Mm-hmm.
I think he gets a little cut. Styx is touring. Marcus King is touring later this month. The guitar player is just – if you see anything this year, go to the soundstage and see Marcus King play the guitar.
Okay. Okay. I will do.
You, blow your mind.
Yeah, I've been out in the last couple of years kind of seeing the stuff that I've grown up with. I'm thinking, you know, between there and the Heritage Fair and Rams.
What's your music? Annapolis. What's your music, Mike? Wait, like when you say what you grew up with, like that could be a lot of things, right?
Because
I grew up with a lot of things at Dundalk Eye.
70s and 80s, and it's the heavier stuff. My favorite bands are Rush, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest.
Okay, so you're
UFO.
More on that edge. I got you. Yeah, okay, you're more on the Motorhead edge.
Yeah.
I saw Priest at the Anthem.
Yes,
Saxon.
Yes,
I mean,
yes,
I'm a big
I was
Saxon
there.
Fan.
Oh, I love them too.
I was Saxon. A Saxon fan. Uh-huh. I saw Saxon open for Rush on February 26, 1980 at the Capitol Center.
Okay.
The first time I saw Rush, it was between Permanent Waves and Moving Pictures. They were playing songs from Moving Pictures. It was a little bit of a trial tour to play their music while they were recording. And then, of course, Exit Stage Left came after that.
Right.
But Saxon opened on the Wheels of Steel. album. And then I put Motorcycle Man and 747 and Strangers in the Night. I mean, and then after that, MTV would play Denim and Leather and those songs. But hey, dude, I love music, man. Come on. I thought music all night, man. Remember when Johnny Allen came to me, he said, there's this band called Accept. They have like this crazy drummer. It's crazy drummer, you know. But I went to, you know, I went to middle school with Johnny. But that music, I was at the Priest Maiden show. I interviewed Halford back in 86 and 87. What a wonderful man. He came on my show a few years ago. I mean, he really is he is the torchbearer for heavy metal, right? Like he really more so is, than Dickinson, more so than anybody else. I mean, he is the embodiment of heavy metal. Robin.
He really is. He really is. He's the metal god. He's absolutely the metal god. And I'm glad that they're still out there going. You know, they're still out there going. You know, they're still. I think there's plans for another album. They had, you know, the one that did in 2018 where I saw them with Saxon. And I think they're getting ready to release something else.
They were great that night, by the way. They were great.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. And I saw them. And that was, what was it? Not Thin Lizzy, but Black Star Riders was with them too, I think, that night.
They played the Pier one night, didn't they?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, they did. They did. They played Pier 6, right?
I was out of town that night, but they played the Pier. My buddy Al went. Al Coachella, man. My dude.
Okay.
You know, I love M3. I don't love all the metal bands, right? Like, I interviewed a lot of them back in the day. I love Tesla. If Tesla's playing, I'm going. I love Tesla of that genre. I mean, but I like Night Ranger. I like seeing them. I saw Slaughter. I saw the one of the versions of L.A. Guns. You know, I've seen Stephen Piercy try to sing Rat songs. What I don't like is when the bands are not appointed well. And I think we could all say we've seen sports athletes go over the hill and bands go over the hill. I think now with all the pitch control and all the sort of layering and fake stuff and the performance part of it, I think most bands have figured out how to get up on stage. And even if they're not fully playing all of their stuff to some degree, I'll give you an example. And you can Google this. Are you an Alarm fan by any chance? The Alarm?
Oh, I knew a little bit about them. They weren't like the main thing I followed, but I was aware of them. And I had heard some of their material back in the
day. Come on down and meet your maker. Come on down and make the stand, you know? So they had the big hair. They were like post-punk Spirit of 76, not quite the Sex Pistols or like Pill, but more like U2, really, like at heart. Right. So the Alarm is one of my all-time favorite bands. And they were four piece and, you know, drug habits. And one guy went on to just become a firefighter. He didn't want to tour the world anymore. But Mike Peters was the guitar player, blonde, songwriter, passion man. He's beaten leukemia five times. He founded this group. My wife's a two-time leukemia survivor, so it's special to me.
Well, that's good to know.
A group called Love, Hope, Strength. Look up Love, Hope, Strength. They do a lot of swabbing at events and at concerts. They're big in the music space. Love, Hope, Strength. Mike Peters and the Alarm. And I've seen him, bro. I'm such a fan, right? I mean, if you go back and see their shows in the 80s, very electrifying. The best show I ever saw at Hammerjacks. And I saw, I don't know, 400 or 500 shows at Hammerjacks. Ozzy, Kiss, go down the list. GNR. The Alarm was the best show I ever saw at Hammer. It was just one of those electrifying nights where he was special. He just, the crowd... It was just the sweat coming off the ceiling. It was that night, you know, and they were such a great band, such a great live band. And he went through a period where he did acoustic. He did storytelling before it was cool. He did, you know, he did all of that stuff. But about 3 years ago, he did something that I had not seen. He brought out a little bit of a click track mini band. And he played one guitar all night and it changed from I don't know instruments that well. But he came out and did like a full band ensemble of his music that was electrifying in a club, but it wasn't taxing from a band. It was him and his wife carrying computers and equipment and him and the guitar, but it sounded and felt bigger. And I had never seen anything like it. Maybe on a street corner, you've seen one guy do a whole band, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was sort of doing that sort of a thing, but I hadn't seen it 35 years later translated in that way that I found to be interesting and compelling in a way that if Geddy Lee came out on a stage and just did his part, that maybe, and I'm not saying that should happen. I'm just saying artists are doing different stuff now. And because of that, I'm willing to be flexible in whatever. I mean, look at Phil Collins trying to put Genesis together in a couple of weeks, right? And come out and do this when he physically, you know, Eric Clapton's tone deaf. I mean, there's all sort as well as brain dead apparently, but, you know, a lot of these artists at the end, you have to say, is it worth $300? Is it worth $500? I felt like Aerosmith was ripping people off a couple of years ago, you know, and yet I went and saw Hall & Oates the other night. They were unbelievable. Alanis was unbelievable. I've never seen the Eagles better than they were 4 weeks ago. And I love me some Glenn Frey. He's gone, but I've seen bands now do. I saw Hootie and the Blowfish come back together 2 years ago, 25, 30 years later, and just sell out sheds and make people happy. Music makes people happy, bro. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, it sure does.
That's what the plague took away from us, that right now I think we're all squeezing out. I know you love to talk sports and all, but I love music, man. And music is seeing Meriwether grown up now and how beautiful it is, seeing the anthem, seeing these new venues, seeing old venues do well, seeing people trying to bring Hammerjacks back to life. I hope I live long enough to see all that and experience it all, you know?
Yeah. I agree with you. I really think, you know, after this, you know, year and a half, and, you know, it looks like that we're still, you know, there are a couple of things that are still out there that are still unknown yet, but I really think, you know, we've had all these creative people kind of cooped up for a year and a half. I really think once things are fully back open and open for good, we're really going to see a renaissance in this country when it comes to arts, music, theater, all kinds of things are going to be coming out. And, you know, not only are, you know, these creative people going to finally get a chance to burst and get all this stuff that they've had cooped up for a year and a half out there. People are sick and tired of, you know, having to meet their friends over Zoom. You know, they want to get out to the venues and be able to see these things too. So I think there's going to be a hell of a market for it. You know, I've even been seeing that in my own shows when I do my murder mystery shows. People are starting to come out and they're glad to finally be out again. Now, again, you know, we still have some restrictions. We can't be stupid yet. But I think, you know, the entertainment world is in for some big things once this finally gets under control. Now, do you agree?
I wholeheartedly. And for people who do love live anything, whether it's theater, you know, in any of those capacities, the outside space and the way to think about it, you know, I was down with the folks running the new Hammerjacks, and they were expressing to me that if they were to do it the perfect way, there'd be an indoor part of the stage and an outdoor part where you on the right nights, 6, 7, 8 months a year now, as global warming picks up, that Hammerjacks would have been a better club if you could lift the roof off of it. It had that sunroof. If you could have extended the back of it out onto a patio that was just open air where people could smoke whatever they're smoking back in the day, that would have made it an even – well, that's what Meriwether is, right? That's what makes Meriwether special, is that I'm out on the lawn and Alanis is stalking the stage singing You Ought to Know, and then you're out on the lawn under the stars and the whole place hushes – and she does Uninvited to end the show, and you want to cry, you know what I mean? Because it's so, there was a rainbow that appeared when Jackson Browne was singing Running on Empty.
Oh, wow.
I looked to the left and there was a double rainbow outside of Meriwether on the night of the Jackson Browne, James Taylor show. So Google that rainbow. I'm like, DJ got it. Donna Jean Rumbley, 107. She got a great picture of the rainbow that I stole, borrowed for that. But it's moments like that and being outside, being with friends. Took my son and his wife to see Hall & Oates the other night, ran into friends, had beer out on the deck. Lovely night. The moon's over there. There's Daryl. There's John. There's Squeeze playing Tempted and Black Coffee in Bed and KT Tunstall. I mean, these were things that were taken away for 18 months that that more than sports, more than movies or television or even travel to some degree, because a lot of the travel I do is to show up and see U2 in Tokyo or U2 in Seoul, Korea, or I wish I could peel away this weekend and go see Pearl Jam do their thing out in Southern California. But I thought Sammy Hagar was bringing the Circle here this week, but he's not. But as you can tell, I'm musicked up, and I feel like we're going to wind up going inside a little bit this winter, and it might not, you know, the plague is not going to go well in parts of this country where people are idiots. And I don't know what that's going to mean for bands. I mean, Paul Stanley, you know, got COVID last month. Kiss was out on the road. Then they're not. I'm sitting right now. I could show you. I have Pearl Jam tickets on my app for two shows in Oakland, California that I've had for a year and a half. The Baltimore show, remember, they were playing the Royal Farms Arena.
Yeah.
That ticket's not on my app. It's on my girl Jenny's app. But I'm invited to that one, too. So whenever they rev up the engine and go out and play, I've been sitting on Stones tickets in Pittsburgh. That show is October the 4th at Heinz Field, a couple Mondays from now. I hope Mick makes it. Lord knows we lost, you know, Charlie. And when the Eagles played last month, the last song of the night, and it was kind of have you seen the Eagles before? Are you an Eagles fan? You a Don Henley fan?
I like the Eagles. I've never seen them in concert, though, but I do.
Henley talks to the crowd, and Henley's political, and he talks to the crowd. At the end of the night, Mike, they played 3 hours and 21 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Like, they were Vince Gill was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the end, they've done every song. They got one. They've done Desperado. They've done everything. They had Best of My Love left, and they came out, they dedicated to Charlie and Don Henley. And this is a almost macabre, almost like a Jack Nicholson Shining thing at the end. The end of the night, he said, "I'll dedicate this to Charlie. Go see him while you can."
Oh, wow. Jeez.
Well, Glenn Frey's not over here anymore, right?
Yeah.
So it takes on a different tone when you think about it like that. So I'm going to see him while I can. I've never been to Nebraska. How's Nebraska this time of year? They got corn out there? What do you think?
Oh, well, I would say, I would say they probably have the tail end of the crop for the summer.
And, I'm in. Omaha, here I come.
Absolutely.
Don Henley and Joe Walsh and Timothy B. Schmidt singing I Can't Tell You Why one more time, you know.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I mean, I had heard from so many people that went to see that show, and they just told me how phenomenal it was. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible. I wanted to ask you a bit about, you know, Baltimore Positive. I've been listening to your shows lately. I think you do a great job with it, and I really enjoyed listening to you tell about your crab cake tour throughout the state. Tell us about that. I tell you, I could have gone for that myself.
Look, man, I've been doing sports radio for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I've always sort of walked the edge of people saying, well, what the hell is he doing now? You know, what's he getting into? And for me, I followed my passion. It's the reason I got into this music, and was my passion at the paper. And we had just had a sports writer reunion this weekend at the Guinness Factory with all the News American and the Sun, the guys I work with. And they all remember me covering music when I was 17. 18, 19 years old, and you follow your passion, you know. And for me, sports was my thing, the Orioles, then the Ravens. I'm 53 now, and I sort of like connecting people has become my passion, and storytelling, and having people way smarter than me who have great stories to tell come on and educate me. And you know, Wise Markets is one of my sponsors. I sold them on the thought that I have wise conversations, intelligent conversation, that I'm trying to find people with wisdom and have them teach me while they teach you. It's an open social studies course. We do tons of football. The Ravens won this week. We talk about them. If they lose this week, we talk about them too. we're still in Owings Mills. Baltimore Positive has usurped all of the WNST platform that's now 23 years old. This is the 30th year for me in radio. December 13th will be my 30th anniversary doing radio on a daily basis. I took a respite and hired a lot of people, which really became my competitor at this point. And I decided to follow what Howard Stern was doing, what Joe Rogan was doing, what Ellen and Oprah do on a daily basis, which is try to make the world a better place.
Trying
to put people together, telling stories about putting people together. My wife was diagnosed with leukemia in 2014. My wife is diabetic and did not know her blood type. Her blood type was B positive.
Oh, okay. Right, so right, right.
Be positive became a mantra. Mm-hmm. And we used it as a hashtag, be more positive, B-M-O-R-E positive. And when I went to think about a new brand, when my friend Don Moeller, my high school guidance counselor, and one time social studies teacher at Lansdowne High, Baltimore County, when he was running Baltimore County after the death of Kevin Kamenetz, I was considering running for mayor. Mm-hmm. I wanted to put a platform together that would be credible. And when I went to get Be More Positive, or B-E-M-O-R-E positive, they were squatted on, but no one wanted Baltimore positive. And I'm like, I'm going to be Baltimore positive because mm-hmm. that's what I am.
Yep.
And I decided to bring my brand together with the crab. The crab came because I opened the crab at Fadley's and Damie Hahn there showed me how to clean it a different way.
Okay.
And I had a video that had 3.5 million views. Go to Facebook and just Google Nestor crab video. It pops right up. And you can see this miracle way to crack a crab that they didn't teach us about in Dundalk, Mike. And I was 50 years old when it happened 3 years ago. So this crab thing happened. I've been eating. I ate the Ray Lewis's first crab he ever ate in his life was with me at the barn.
Oh, nice.
Maryland
nice.
Crab. Yeah, that's true. 1996. That's very true. Night after the Raiders game. He didn't even know. He didn't know how to touch it. He didn't know what to do with it. By the middle of the season, he was ordering 3 dozen from Joey over there. But crabs have always been a part of my life. You know, East Baltimore mm-hmm. crabbing. Costas has been a sponsor forever. Al Seafood. All the family's been with me forever. My friends at Fadley's. So the crab cake tour became a little bit of ping pong democracy for me with the world so divided. You know, a lot of my, you know, ill-advised friends supporting this lunatic who ran the country for 4 years, who should be in a prison somewhere under a prison, that they're a little misguided, but maybe getting a crab cake and a beer would be a way to discuss his criminality or, you know, talk furthermore about January 6th or any other issue that what you like or don't like about Joe Biden or Larry Hogan or Johnny O or Stuart Pittman or Barry Glassman or Brandon Scott or any of these other people, Ben Cardin, Chris mm-hmm. Van Hollen. I have everybody on the show who's sane, who could come on with some credible say. Anybody that's going to tell me vaccines don't work and kiss my ass and take a hike, because I'm not putting Russian propaganda on my airwaves. I have an FCC license.
No.
So I've dealt in fact. Who, what, where, why, when is a journalist my whole life. It's my mm-hmm. father taught me that way. My mother taught me that way. Every journalist I've ever been with, it's been my life's work to get it truth. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. this is a platform for me to open the door to that, to open the door to conversation for beer, maybe even a Bloody Mary over a crab cake. Mm-hmm. And the crab cake tour is something we're going to be doing every Friday. The Maryland Lottery signed on to sponsor it. Let yourself play. And every Friday I'm going to be going neighborhood to neighborhood. This week I'm in Hampstead. Week I was in Dundalk. I'm in Gardenville, maybe Lauraville with the mayor, Brandon Scott, on October the 8th. We're going to be with him having a Coco's crab cake. That's his favorite mm-hmm. crab cake. And also gives me a chance to say, hey, Mike, what's your favorite crab cake? And then I say, well, let's do the show at your place. Well, where do you want to have it? So where's your favorite crab cake?
Oh, I love Costas. I love Costas.
Well, I was there on Friday with Johnny O, and I pulled like a little left-handed move. Well, mm-hmm. first things first, you said you would have gone to Dundalk. Where did you go?
I went to Calvert Hall.
Oh, the hall.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now I understand. So my son went to the hall, Perry Hall, you know.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But Johnny O taught at Patapsco and went to Spears yep. Point, and I mm-hmm. went to Dundalk. So it becomes this Bermuda Triangle conversation of who owns Bear Creek and who gets the Golden Domes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I went to Costas on the crab cake tour and didn't get a crab cake. I got the crab imperial because
okay.
I love their crab imperial. And my yeah. wife tonight heated up the remnants of the cream spinach they have at Costas.
Oh, that's good.
It is the best cream spinach on earth, so I swear by it. But that's being from Dundalk, I tell everybody, we had 100 places that had crab cakes as a kid.
Oh,
Ross's,
yeah.
House in Neptune's, Ruggiero's. Uh-huh. I mean, just go down the list of all of the – every sub shop in Dundalk had a incredible crab cake.
Yes, they
Cinino's
did.
Cinino's
yes,
in my did. Neighborhood, Nico's. They all had a decent – Filetti's. They uh-huh. all had a crab cake that didn't stink.
Yep, and I tell you what, everybody's mom made excellent different versions of crab soup too.
Oh, we made a pot. 2 weeks ago, I'll leave you on this, but because you're going to get me hungry. My wife didn't love crab, didn't like crab for the first 15 years of our marriage. She had two bone marrow transplants from a German donor in 2014 and 15. And through this DNA, she's a completely different human being. Like her blood is his blood, literally. It's science, kind of like vaccines. You wonder why I believe in vaccines, because I sat over at Hopkins watching doctors keep my wife alive. I trust them. It's a good idea. So my wife's taste buds changed. So she likes different things now. When she was always very adventurous about trying things, but she likes things she didn't like before.
So
crab has become one of these things, and Old Bay, and like the saltiness and all that. She has a taste for it now. So I told her in February, I'm doing this crab cake tour. She's like, you're nuts. I'm like, yeah, they'll all say that till I come back and the governor has a crab cake with me. But they told me I was nuts doing sports radio back in 92. But so yeah, here we are. So she eats the crab cake with me. And I had 42 crab cakes in 30 days because I had a couple of doubles and went to some places twice in a day when I was in some odd places. And she like started ordering the crab soup in places because we would ask the server, what's good here? Oh, crab soup. I'm like, all right, it's $5. Get a cup of it. We'll check it out, you know. And we didn't have anything that was great. We didn't have any memorable crab soup. We had a lot of memorable crab cakes. I mean, I had 15 or 20 crab cakes that were delicious, great, awesome. And I had five or six that were otherworldly, and I had five or six that stunk. And I had 10 that were, you know, they were good. They were fine. They were seven, they were an eight. They weren't extraordinary. So along that pathway, no good crab soup. So my wife, we get back, and I did my final tour stops at Al Seafood, now in Dundalk, of Essex, of Highland Town, of Hooper's Island. It's a long story. And Chad's place burned down. He's had some hardships, some family hardship, want to help him out, promote his place a little bit. And my friends at Costas have been there. They've been my sponsors for 20 years. My mother ate in their million. My mother ate in Al's too. And Mr. Al was a bone marrow transplant. They're like my children. They're all my sponsors. They're all family to me, right? So my wife wants to make crab soup. And I said, all right, look. We're going to go over, we're going to get a snowball because the season's ending and I got to go to Dundalk and get an icy delight. We're going to go over to Costas. We'll get some crabs at Costas. We'll get some crabs at Al's. We'll pull the legs off and the seasonings are different. I said, so you're going to get a different flavor. They're very different.
Yeah.
So we took the legs and my wife, who is, you've heard of the soup Nazi in Seinfeld. She's the soup queen. Soup queen. My wife makes soup better than anybody. I'll put my wife's soups against anyone, but the secret is you can't eat it till like day three or four or five. It has to sit in the refrigerator. It's the only way it gets any good. I've learned this. But my wife makes like absurd soups. Name it. Split pea, chili, bean, the lentil and sauce. I mean, name it. So she's never made crab soup. So we get several recipes is the way we do things, checked all of it. And I said to her, look, let's go kitchen sink with this, okay? So we went over to Chad. He had done WBAL promoting this crab tasting that they're having in Laurel, this crab tasting. And he had a pound of Maryland crab meat that he was using for the demonstration that he couldn't sell. He's like, here, take this home, put this in your crab meat. It's 2 days old. It's perfect. It's been in my fridge. Perfect. Can't sell it, but it's yours. It's lump, Maryland lump, right? So now I got lump crab meat. I got legs from Al's, legs from Costas. My wife and I, Wise Market sponsors us. They had fresh okra, fresh white silver queen corn, fresh green beans. We had fire roasted tomatoes. I told my wife, bacon, onions. Here's the secret. Cabbage, right?
I've had that.
She made a 5-gallon thing. We put 15 legs in this. We put a pound of the crab later. Day three, we added the crab. She seasoned this thing down. Mike, it was the best crab soup I've ever had in my life. She was trying to remember everything she put in, but she put in Dijon mustard. She put in dry mustard. She put in Worcestershire. We put in celery seed. We put in J.O. We put in Old Bay. We just threw okra, everything. It was like a stew. It was so delicious, man. It was
the best crab soup ever. You're giving me some ideas for mine now because I make it too. My secret is that I use I juice tomatoes and using that for the broth as compared to, because some people use a beef broth actually for
No. We had a place with beef. It was wrong. Yeah, it was really wrong.
I used tomato.
She used chicken stock in this.
Huh.
And she was questioning whether she should or shouldn't. And I said, use it. Mm-hmm. All of her soups have this richness because of the chicken stock she uses in it. She uses it in the sausage and lentil. She uses it in our split pea and ham. Mm-hmm. Like, she uses chicken stock and it works. And she, you know, she sweat down carrots, onions, as you made a roux basically, right? And sweat that down with bacon. Bacon in the beginning, fire roasted tomatoes gives it that extra kick, you know, and then just every vegetable. Oh, she had fresh lima beans, fresh,
okay,
not out of a can,
right?
Fresh lima beans in this thing, lima beans, green beans, okra, corn, potatoes. She had potatoes,
okay,
for potatoes too. And I mean, it was outrageous. So there you go. There's my tip for the day. And don't forget the okra. It makes it a little slimy. Get past it. It makes a little bit more. It's rich. It gives it thickness. It gives it body. It makes it a stew. You don't want a thin soup. Nobody wants thin soup.
Nope. Not at all. Not at all. That sounds great.
Rock and roll soup. What else you need? Ravens?
Anything here. I wanted to just ask a couple of things. You had mentioned, you know, you got together with a bunch of sports writers. By the way, my dad is in the Dundalk High School Sports Hall of Fame. He led the Baltimore County in 1962 for Dundalk High. He was the scoring leader in basketball. That was the year they lost to Towson in the championship. But that was
65.
The first 62.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yep. And he worked for the News American. You were talking about sports writers. And he would go around when he was in high school and gather the sports scores and bring them all in to the News American. Worked under Vince Bagley. And he told me he was at a Rotary Club meeting or something years later, and Vince Bagley was the guest speaker. He goes over to Vince Bagley after the talk, and he says, "Hi, Mr. Bagley." And he goes, "Oh, hi, Bob." He says, "Oh, you remember me from all those years ago at the News American." And Vince Bagley looked at him and said, "No, you have a name tag on."
Vince was great, man. Yeah. The Dean, we lost him last year.
Yeah.
You know, I'll give you my Vince Bagley stories. Vince was on television. Vince was the first sportscaster I loved. Mm-hmm. So he's special, different. I mean, no offense to Jack Dawson, who I never knew.
I didn't really ever
meet Jack Dawson. And people think that's weird. Jamie Costello's blown away. Keith Mills is blown away. Norm Lewis, they were all like, "You never met Jack Dawson." And I'm like, I never met Jack. I was intimidated by Jack Dawson. I worked with Bill Burton, and on my crab cake tour at the Evening Sun, Bill Burton was on Channel 2. He was the fisherman with the pipe.
Yes, I remember him.
Back in the day, right? So the Channel 2 crew. But there was only 2011 and 13. And 13, they had a different seat for sports. Nick Charles left when I was a little boy
to go to
CNN. And they had Klaus Wagner. We lost Randy Blair, the great Randy Blair.
Oh, I remember that.
John Buren, right? So, but as a kid, Vince was forever and Chris Thomas. So as a side note, Don Mohler, when I was a 13-year-old boy in high school in 1982, Don Mohler told me I was going to be the next Chris Thomas. Well, in 1982, he told me that. So
nice.
I always I give him a hard time about that. But Vince was the man, and Vince was on TV. And when I started at the News American in 1984, I found the picture from the old newsroom. If I could share, I probably can actually share this picture with your audience here. I don't have sharing privilege, but if you give it to me, I'd share it, because this picture was actually taken from the News American right in the newsroom back in the day. This is 1984. If I could share, I'll share it on my Twitter for sure. But there's all of these old papers laying around and all of these old file cabinets and all this old stuff from Stedman. And I was the intern of all interns. I was 15 years old, walking around, working 4 hours twice a week. And they're like, "Hey, kid, go over there, clean that up." And to me, oh my God, my encyclopedia brain, going through these file cabinets and finding clips of Vince Bagley. Mm-hmm. I never knew Vince Bagley worked at the newspaper until I was in the newspaper, in the sports department, where this picture was taken that I have literally in that room. I found Vince's clips and I'm like, Vince Bagley started as a writer. I know I'm on the right path being at the paper then. Because if I want to be Vince, I'm in the place that Vince was in the beginning. So Vince is very special to me. Mm-hmm. I honored Vince with a Nice Guy Award back in the 90s. And when he passed, I found a tape of Vince and Clem Florio, who was like an uncle to me. Clem was a boxer. Oh, mm-hmm. You baby doll. He bet the ponies. Clem Florio. And he was great friends with Larry King. And Clem was a real renaissance man. Wonderful, wonderful man. I played bocce with Clem in Little Italy with my son when he was a little boy. Clem's a legend. He and Vince were contemporaries. And I honored them on the same night at Michael's 8th Avenue, where I was married in 2003. They used to have the fights down there. And I found an hour-long conversation that night of the two of them sitting down telling old stories. Mm-hmm. And I found this when Vince died last year. And I have all of these tapes. It's funny that I'm wearing this cassette.
Yeah,
I have all the cassettes from the 90s, everything mm-hmm. I've ever done. And you ask about Baltimore Positive. It's a repository for all of that stuff. So my interview with David Bowie, my interview with Rob Halford, all of it. It lives up on BaltimorePositive.com. You can put it in a search. If you just put Judas Priest into the search, Rob Halford will pop up, and you can listen to 25 minutes of me rambling on with Rob Halford in 1986 at the Tremont Hotel after the show. Or you can hear the one from 2017 or 18, whenever he was out with the Anthem show. So all the stuff I have in my career, I've tried to keep. And a lot of that lives. So, those are great memories, and I hope to be the Baltimore historian, right? Of music and sports, and now hopefully making our city better. Cause that's really what, you know, I want to lift the city, not personally, but by bringing people together. People need to know each other for us to be a community. And there've been too many walls, silos around race, color, creed, economics, you know, where you live. Redlining, all of these horrible things that have happened here, that we need to make it better. And that's my mission with Baltimore Positive. And that doesn't mean that I can't talk sports or have Cal Ripken on or talk about last night's game or tomorrow's game or be there when the Orioles ever get better again. We'll see. Time will tell. I mean, I've been fighting that battle, you know, my entire career, and I'm just sick of it. I'd rather be doing good things. That would make me feel more fulfilled as a human being.
I really salute you for what you're doing with that, because I have listened and I really like how you're able to get all kinds of people from different points of view and everything and have a civil discussion about the things you want to talk about in a, you know, positive environment, you know.
Well, when people say the city sucks, you know what I say to them? Well, tell me we're going to fix it.
Yeah.
Well, you better have somebody better have a solution. Mm-hmm. We fixed Medellin. We fixed Detroit. Cleveland, the lake was on fire. They fixed it. Right? I mean,
this
place was a self-proclaimed shithole in 1971, 72, when Mayor Schaefer found that we had race riots. We had all sorts of problems, economic and racial and otherwise. And, you know, one day we rose again. We built an inner harbor that was the rage of the country at one point. We built these stadia. We maybe get a World Cup here. You know, we can do it. We can do it. You know, it's just it's about education. And it's about people and it's about community. And I believe that. And until I take my last breath, that's what I'm going to stick with for now.
Well, that's great. That's great. I really, like I said, I really salute what you're doing there. And that's, you know, the one thing that I'm really trying to do here is to give people an alternative. You know, I really don't talk politics. I really don't talk, you know, no sex, no religion, no politics on the show. But what we do have around here is a wonderful, wonderful heritage in the entertainment. And
why no sex? What's the problem with that? How's that?
Well, you know, we have, I mean, there are so many great bands and such a history of, you know, independent television stations with all kinds of great memories coming from it. You know, these bands like, you know, we had, you know, Kix, DC Star. We had a great music scene in the 80s here where,
is it love? You know,
I mean, there's just so much
Star back in the day.
And is it you? And
a teardrop says no rainbow. I remember that one. Yep, yeah, that's a good one.
Is it you?
Yep. Is it you? Yeah. All right. I love that one. See, now you're getting me. You're going to have me like finding 45s or doing Google searches at 3 a.m. for old videos and stuff. So yeah.
I had DC Star as a guest. I had Dave Simmons and Glenn Jones on not too long ago. And they were telling me about, you know, all the days in the clubs on the road, you know, hanging out with Zebra in New York City. playing with Twisted Sister up on Long Island. They were kind of, they were really based both here and in New York, and they were telling me a lot of stories about that. I've had Face Dancer on the show, Scott McGinn. He was a great guest.
Red Shoes, man. Come on, man.
And Bud Becker, I've had him on probably about six times, just telling me his stories from the road. I had him do two episodes on his days of booking talent at Hammerjacks. There are some great stories out there. We really do have a great heritage in this area. And this is something for people to listen to together, reminisce and enjoy, you know.
Well, you know, we lose people, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. We lost a dear friend of ours a couple of months ago, Johnny, who worked at Arista and was just A&M.
Oh, yeah.
Legendary guy and a wonderful, wonderful man. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad that I didn't plug him in and put him on the show. You know what I mean?
That I didn't
spend time with him. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful, you know, for friends of mine that I've lost, or I was visiting with some mm-hmm. sports writers over the weekend, a dear friend of mine who had dementia, still with us, but not with us in that way any longer, mm-hmm. that I spent time with them when they could share stories about Muhammad Ali or share stories about mm-hmm. things that I was interested in that you always heard when you were a kid, we should listen to our elders, that our elders yes. would have stories, mm-hmm. that this is the way tribes and people lived forever. Right. So mm-hmm. I think with all the bullshit and disharmony that mm-hmm. goes on in the world and all the fake news, so to speak, mm-hmm. of where we are, having people tell stories about polio is how we're going to get people vaccinated, right?
Right.
Literally. And I wish my parents were here to tell those stories right now, but they told me, so I'll tell you. So, man, it's been great. I'm happy to come back and visit with you anytime. You mm-hmm. know, it's been a busy time here as we kick off the football season and stuff, but I hope to bend the elbow with you at a concert that's not Steel Town. I mean, I don't know. That'd be a flea market right now if we did that, right?
We can go over there and get
a milkshake or something.
Go over there and get a pretzel, you know. But yeah, just, you know, one, you know, I had, you know, a couple of older, you know, radio guys on, you know, Frank Luber told me about covering the Martin Luther King March, and he stood next to Marlon Brando during the speech.
Wow. You know,
Marlon Brando pulled out a cattle prod and said, you know, they use this to torture people in the South. You want to feel it? And he's like, no, I'm trying to listen to Martin Luther King. and Marlon Brando had a cattle prod out. He also told me, you know, Alan Walden told me about how he broke the news of the JFK assassination. You know, on the radio station he was working on, he's at the station. News of the JFK assassination comes over the ticker tape. Now he has to break the news to the market that he was in at the time. He told me all about that. I mean, there is so much history with the people in this area. You know, I had Captain Chesapeake's daughter tell me basically the first 20 years of history of Channel 45. You see her at a lot of concerts too. She's really nice. But you know, I really wanted to put this podcast together to kind of capture this history and to be able to share it with people. And the one thing that got me started, and I know, you know, you've got to wrap it up here. I'm also a musician. I played, you know, an open mic number of years ago, and I'm not going to mention names. Okay. But a couple of younger millennial guys were running it. And there was a person from a, you know, very well-known legendary Baltimore area band in there waiting to perform. Okay. So, and we were signed up and everything. And, you know, another young fella comes in and he says, okay, I'll get you on right after that old guy over there. And I was like, do you know who that is? The kid had no clue who it was. And I'm not going to say who it was because I don't want to embarrass anybody. But I was like, you know, this kid, you know, and it's not his fault. You know, he was too young to remember it. But, you know, this person was in a well-known band that was just, you know, lighting the scene up, you know, in the 80s and 70s. And, you know, now he's that's not just some old guy, you know, that's somebody with a lot of history and a lot of stories. And the thing is, too, is that, you know, when these people start dying, that history is going to go with them. So I'm trying to really, you know, kind of capture that and, you know, get it out there so people can have a good time and reminisce and younger people can hear it.
Well, I'm glad to be a part of it. I feel like I'm doing the same thing when I get together with bands and update stories and do. I have Mark Bryan on from Hootie and the Blowfish. He's from Silver Spring, Redskins, Terps guy, long Oriole fan, long suffering and all that. And he's got a solo project, but catching up with people through life's journey to say, where were you? Where are you now? Where are you going? And I, a lot of musicians don't have that. The newspapers used to do that. When I was the critic, they would come through town and I'd interview them. There aren't a whole lot of places. And I think during COVID, I saw a lot of musicians doing Zooms for, you know, pass the hat kind of things.
Yeah.
Having an outlet for musicians to tell their stories because they have traveled. Every person I know that was in a real band has traveled and has seen the world in a completely different light in a rock and roll band than someone that, no offense, never left Dundalk or never left Baltimore or only has been past Ocean City and been to Walt Disney World once. If you've been out on the road with a band, I had a guy reach to me. This is the power music, and I'll let you go on this, but I had Tommy Conwell on my show. I love Tommy. I love the Young Rumblers, one of my favorite bands. I've known Tommy from the beginning. He was one of the guys that could have made it, could have been a billionaire, wasn't, didn't, went back, taught school, taught elementary school, works in his family business now. Humble, regular Philadelphia guy, you know, and did the interview with him. And one of his people saw it because he didn't do a lot of interviews. He's a little... He didn't really want to do it, you know, a little bit when I got him on. It was fun for him, but he doesn't do a lot of that. He's not looking to put a light on himself because he was famous enough for his tastes, right? Yep, yep. As he said, I got enough people know who I am. I love that. He's not looking to tour the world or be in a band or be on Letterman again. Did all that, you know. And one of his guitar techs saw the interview, reached to me on Facebook. And from the stories we told from the 80s, told me that he was a kid who is illegally in Tommy's entourage as a guitar tech. He said he was 15 showing up at Hammer Jack's when I was 15 showing up at Hammer Jack's because we're the same age. Listen to this. This is the neatest thing. He caught on with a band who caught on with a band. He became Joe Perry's guitar tech. He's been all over the world with 10 different bands you've heard of, you know, the Santanas and this band and that band and whatever. It's all he's ever done. He's our age. He's 53 years old. Looks like he has a beautiful home up in New Jersey. And he took a different pathway in life. But he's literally been all over the world with Bon Jovi, with, you know, like, and that's a cat you want on your show. That's when you know, when somebody's got tread on their tire, little, you know, a little silver coming in up here, you know, that's what, some shit's gone wrong for them, you know, at some point along the line. You know, as Mike Tyson said, they got punched in the first round, you know, and how they responded. So there you have it. Mike, it's been a pleasure coming on with me. I appreciate you making time for me.
Nestor, thank you so much for being here. Would you like to, you know, just give your plugs real quick before we wrap it up?
Oh, everybody knows who the hell I am. Yeah, Papa Joe was my – Papa Joe Chevalier did a show after me. And national radio, they wanted you to, like, say your name, say the station, say the call letter, kiss the ass of all the affiliates. They had all these things you needed to do, and I was good at all of them. You know, welcome back. I'm Nasty Nestor Aparicio. You're listening to 101 Sports. So that you wanted to say your name because if in case Mike saw it and had a book this month, he'd write – down what he was listening to. Remember the time you spent listening to The Fan. So they did all these little tricks. And I remember Papa Joe, we'd be sitting in a production meeting and Mark Jenskow, who was, I'm not going to say how I felt about Mark Jenskow. He gave me an opportunity in life, but yeah. So he would sit in the meeting and he would say, now guys, you got to say your name. Joe. And Papa Joe was the irascible, old, salty, from York, Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh fan, lived in Vegas, loved me to tears. And I'll do my best Papa Joe for you, right? Everybody listen to Papa Joe Chevalier. Go Google him. He was a legend. And we lost him. And one of my favorite people. Still owes me a steak at Burns Steakhouse, that bastard. He better pay up in heaven when I get up there. There better be a dessert bar waiting for me. But he would sit in the meeting. He'd say, for Christ's sake, they all know my name. You listen to the goddamn show five nights a week. I'm not saying my name. I don't need to say my name. You say my name. My name's in the bumper. It's in the crawl. It says, we're listening to Papa Joe. Why do I need to say my name? So anyway, so there's the plug. My name's Nestor. You can find me. I'm WNST and Baltimore Positive. So thanks for coming on.
And thank you all for listening. This has been Nestor Aparicio on Foul Players Radio, and we'll see you all next time.